Good morning, afternoon, and evening, everyone. Welcome to the 7th episode of the FPL Wire, powered by Dreamset Go. I'm your host, Zofa, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Late Riser. Good game week for you this week, Ella.
Finally, Zof. It was due in my head. Shout out to both you and AK, both Chelsea fans who I trust. You messaged me on Saturday morning that you've got a good feeling about Werner on that day. And I was dilly-dallying between Mo Salah and Werner for the captaincy. I'd been on Werner all week, and then I was just feeling a little nervous about it on the last day. But I'm glad I didn't shift. Feel happy that it came through. All my attackers returned except for Podence, who I'm happy to keep this week. In defense, Semedo is taking over nicely, and I thank you for that again, because you talked me out of Reece James and into Semedo. So yeah, all in all, happy and hoping the streak continues. Also looking at our friend Bakar, who's not here, he's studying for his exams at the moment. He also had a pretty decent week. He clocked 66 points without Spurs assets like me. Salah captain worked for him. Sterling, Werner, DCL, Martinez, they brought the chunk of points for him. How about you?
I mean, it's a bit of a strange week. I think it was one where if you didn't own Kane, then you really, irrespective of how well everyone else did, you pretty much fell behind. Like, I got returns from all 7 of my attackers, but I still got a very small green arrow from 700k to 650k. So it was really just a week. If you owned Kane, you were in profit. If you didn't, and I think you were probably one of the few people who got such a big green arrow without any Spurs players.
Yeah, it was your boy Timo that came through for me and 2 spectacular goals. I enjoyed watching that performance, hoping he doesn't repeat it.
Enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy the second half as much, but we'll get into that when we talk about my new Chelsea.
All right.
Just a quick word about our sponsors. Dreamset Go is a global portal for fans to gain access to sporting events around the world. Accommodation, flight tickets, hospitality, stadium visits, everything can be tailored exactly to your requirements. They also do celebrity experiences, which include masterclasses with your favorite sports celebrity or something as simple as birthday shoutouts. Visit dreamsetgo.co for more. The FPL Wire is a part of the Fantasy Scout Network, and all stats used in this podcast are taken from the FFS members area. Please sign up if you haven't already.
Every week. Anyway, talking about the agenda for today's pod, it's pretty elaborate. We're going to be talking about Liverpool defense and whether it's time to get rid of them again, because VVD is out for the season. That's the big news that happened this weekend. Then we'll talk about defensive options. A lot of questions coming in for defenders to target, and we'll be talking about premium as well as basement defenders to target. Kane, who's been on a hot streak all season. Kane versus other strikers and what we're thinking about that. The polarizing season that we are going through at the moment, and how do we deal with that? A lot of questions with regards to mental health as well. People were upset because just such big hauls coming through. So that's something we're going to address. The teams that we're going to be looking at are Wolves, Leeds and Aston Villa, and the standard captains, differentials. Bakar sent us his 3 top stats for the week. We'll be looking at our teams and the Q&A. And of course, the hot fixture. We're going to be talking about United-Chelsea in detail, the pod derby, as we like to call it. So let's start with the Liverpool.
We're both kitted out for it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is. I don't think you're going to be happy at the weekend, though.
I don't think so either, but let's wait for that discussion a bit later.
All right. So we'll start with the Liverpool defenders. So now, Van Dijk injured, and we had a few questions with regards to that. So I'll just read out a few questions that we've gotten from our listeners so far. At the rate FPL being is asking, is it worth even spending 5.5 million in defense, considering every Tom, Dick and Harry are actually scoring for fun? Nice pun that he mentioned. He actually is after Harry. At Tunde at the rate BBAL Gun 59 is asking us if it's time to drop Trent, seeing that he's playing much deeper and Van Dijk is basically out for the season. And FPL Essential, a friend of the pod, is asking our thoughts on the pool defense and the double defense, especially with Van Dijk out. What's your thinking there, Zof?
I mean, let's address it one by one. I think now we must look at what is going Liverpool's backline going to be with Van Dijk out. There's some rumors, I think, that Matip also has an injury. It might not be as long term. So I think we are looking at Gomez and Fabinho at centre back, which isn't too bad a combination if you ask me. Fabinho is pretty good at centre back against Chelsea. I think he can work well with Gomez. So it's not like they've gone to a from like a champion defence to a relegation defence. Let's just be clear about that. Yes, The defense is weaker, but it's not a complete write-off, as some seem to be suggesting. So I do like the idea of keeping one to just like, you know, I'll give my thoughts in a very concise manner. I like the idea of having one defender, at least TA or Robertson, but I wouldn't be keen on having two right now.
Yeah, I think I agree with your sentiments as well. But I do see value in, let's say, you know, people are wanting to get one or two big hitters more in attack, especially this season when we have so many options and they want to remove funds out of the defense. Yeah, do it. But if I feel like if you have other optional routes to, you know, making your attack greater, do it. Do that right now instead of downgrading the pool defense right now, especially with Sheffield at home for Liverpool next, which I think is a game very, very suited to those Liverpool fullbacks.
I think the next two fixtures is a good time to evaluate, to see how many chances they concede, how well they defend, how far forward Trent and Robertson are getting now. So I think that I would probably wait the next two fixtures to answer this question better.
This is just a few things that I've thought about, you know, that are going to change in the Liverpool setup with Van Dijk being out right now. In my opinion, their set piece attack threat in attack goes down as well, because Van Dijk is such a great header of the ball, and Trent and Robertson are the ones taking those corners and set pieces as well. So that sort of goes down somewhat, given that Van Dijk is not playing. In defense as well, right? The set piece defending is something that I'm worried about. Van Dijk is so good. Mm. And Liverpool play a very risky sort of game, right? High line, pressing oriented. And Van Dijk actually covers 2/3 of the pitch in that defense. That's what actually allows Robbo to bomb forward so much. He's licensed to move ahead so much on that side of the pitch is because Van Dijk is covering that side of the pitch. Now, I wonder if he's pulled back a little, if he has to show some more restraint than usual, because Van Dijk is not going to be playing right now. So that is something I'm worried about. Where are you on Trent versus Robertson at the moment, if you had to pick one between the two?
I would go with Trent, and I've got the stats up here for defenders. Now, in terms of chances created, only Dean and Cresswell have created more chances than TA. And this is keeping in mind the first game week, he really wasn't really up to it. He created almost nothing that week. Even in terms of shots, that's not here in this table here, but I think he's even taken more shots than Robbo. So TA is going nowhere for me. I still think TA and Robertson are pretty much attacking midfielders for what the amount of attacking output they offer.
Yeah, but my thinking is changing now. If I had to pick one, the only thing I'm worried about is if what I mentioned earlier, if Robbo has to show some restraint and in attack.
Exactly.
Now that
that's what Van Dijk is. So I think the next 2 weeks we can see how far are they attacking as much, or are they been told to defend? I think the next 2 weeks will give us a good idea.
Yeah, because what was happening otherwise, I think since restart, tactically Liverpool have shifted around a few things. Hendo is playing on the right hand side and he's occupying a lot of the spaces that Trent used to occupy, which got him those huge hauls. Now, Trent is not getting those huge hauls. Also, the quality, I was talking to FPL Rhinos on Twitter, and his point was correct, where Trent's quality of delivery is so good that he is okay crossing in from deep because he's got that accuracy. Robbo is not that good, which is why Robbo is running past the ball, and it's a very simple cutback for him to get those assists, which is why he's getting the higher volume. And he's also in the box a lot and he's shooting a lot more as well. So if Robbo continues to do what he's been doing so far this season, then I think Robbo over Trent is the play. But I mean, we had a look at the fixture ticker as well, and until game week 15, Liverpool are sitting in the top three amongst defenses. So it is a long-term play where I don't expect them to concede goals for fun. Like you mentioned, Fabinho is a good player and they aren't going to be rubbish. And Alisson isn't far away as well. I think
End of the month, definitely. I think after the next international break, he's back.
Yeah, so that's not too much. And he's got two easy fixtures to sit out until then. So yeah, I am with your assessment in terms of holding on to one of them at least, if not two.
Yeah. I think we can move on.
All right. Which is defenders. I mean, a lot of people are asking what defenders to bring in. I think a lot of people are shifting around defenders. A lot of people are getting rid of one out of two Liverpool defenders at the moment. We had a friend of the pod, FPL Ferry, asking us which three defenders would we bring in except for the Liverpool boys. We have Aman Gahoy asking us, considering that easy fixture run, which Crystal Palace defender to choose? Will PVA start between PVA, Chilwell and Reguilon, which is the better prospect for the coming 6 weeks? Rover underscore FPL was asking us thoughts on the City defense, which I thought was quite interesting. So let's open up the tickers on the screen.
I have that here already.
And we'll go team by team. Starting with Aston Villa, what do you think about Aston Villa?
I've been so impressed. I think they've kept the most clean sheets along with Wolves. That's three clean sheets in their four games. And they've done it with some attacking threat also. They have had a great transfer window. They've got a good goalkeeper, a settled defense. And the fixtures are really good. So I think there's...
Would you double up though?
No, I don't think I would double up. But there's a question now to be asked whether you should go for one of the defenders or Martinez. Because traditionally, my rule is if a defender is cheaper than the goalkeeper, you always go for the defender because you have more chance of an attacking return. So that's the decision to be made over there. Now, there's primarily, I think, two options. There's Konsa and there's Target, who I know we liked from last year. Now, the thing with Konsa is like with Grealish winning so many free kicks, there's just balls being thrown into the box a lot more. So I like Konsa a lot. Target also has some, I think he took a few set pieces, as you mentioned. He also has some threat for opening play. So I think both of them are good options.
If you had to pick between one of them?
I would probably say
Target. It's a tough call.
It's a tough call, actually. There's not really much to split them. The Target, they could say there's some threat with Neil Taylor when the fixtures are close, but he likes Target. But Target is a bit injury prone. I remember he missed a few games last year. Konsa seems a lot more bulletproof.
All right. So you're on Konsa. I think I prefer him to Target as well. And that's mainly because I trust the opinion of our friends Tom Freeman and Adam Hawcross, who are both good FPL players and Aston Villa fans, and they're watching Villa week in, win out, so week in, week out. So they just think that Villa, like you mentioned, Grealish wins a lot of set pieces, so we go there. Just a little note here, we're actually looking at the defensive ticker, and we sorted it until game week 15 because both of us believe that when you're looking at getting in defenders, you're trying to get them in for the long run, which is why we're looking at a more long-term picture. Next on the ticker, we have Everton. Now, Everton have impressed me a lot in terms of defensive numbers as well. The only problem in that defense right now is Pickford. But I don't think that's going to stop them from keeping a few clean sheets because the team in general is good. We have Allen and Doucouré shielding that defense as well. Both their defenders are also doing well. I think Dinia is more expensive. Is quite expensive at 6.1. Yeah, he's a good pick, especially with James playing a lot of these crossfield passes to Dinia on that side. And we always see that Dinia runs beyond the defense and then crosses it to DCL, who's there for the tap-in. But I feel like he's not worth his price because we have a few exciting options at 5.5 who offer the same sort of attacking threat as well as defensive threat. So if I was going Everton, actually, I mentioned him in the earlier pod as well. Michael Keane is somebody who I like for his price. He's 5.1. He's a decent threat on set pieces. He can win a few bonus points as well. If I was going Everton, I'd go Michael Keane. In fact, I'm looking at him if I was to downgrade Trent at any point.
Because, yeah, a big appeal of Dean last year, at least, was his set pieces, right? He used to take their corners and free kicks. He doesn't do that anymore. And now I think the appeal of Keane is also enhanced because of how good James' set-piece delivery is. Almost every time he's putting in a corner or free kick, they're getting a shot off. So I agree with you on Keane. I think he's a great option.
Dinia, not for you?
Not for me. And also, if you look at their fixtures, they're a bit of a mixed bag. I don't think they're as easy as they seem on paper. Now, you see, there's Southampton away, Newcastle away. Could be clean sheets, but both these teams are all right. Then there's United. Easy fixture. Fulham, Leeds, Burnley. So it's not as easy as it seems on paper. In terms of clean sheets over the next six, I would say probably two.
That's true, actually. Yeah, Southampton and Newcastle. Southampton, United, I don't see them keeping clean sheets. Maybe Newcastle and Fulham, you're right, though. Worth waiting on. But again, you know, you're bringing in a defender for the long term. And yeah, but Dinia doesn't. It just seems very expensive at this point. I mean, because especially now we have a nailed City defender. That's the third team on the fixture ticker who seems pretty nailed and he costs 5.5, which is 0.6 million lesser than Dinia. He doesn't have as much attacking threat as Dinia does, but I expect City to keep a few clean sheets. And Ruben Dias has really impressed me in the past two games. I thought he's looked really good, really steady. I feel like City put in a really impressive performance against Arsenal. Yeah, they had a weird formation with Walker playing at centre-back. I don't know what was happening there, but I think it was very specific to that game and Arteta and Pep outthinking each other and overthinking. But Dias looks good. I think like he's going to play all the games and at 5.5, he's going to be keeping a few clean sheets. Do you like that pick?
Yeah, I do. I think he's a bit like Laporte. On the surface, he looks a bit dull, but I think he's always going to be a bit of a threat at set pieces with how good De Bruyne's delivery is. And the only problem with City defenders, though, is that I would say if he's not going to get an attacking return, it's very unlikely he's going to get bonus. But they score so many goals, you're looking at 6 points week in, week out, which is a bit dull for me.
Fair enough, fair enough. And especially now we have Reguilon, Chilwell and Semedo who offer a good amount of attacking threat as well. But still, I like City because they're definitely going to be keeping more clean
Yeah.
sheets than all these other teams.
Especially from
So
game week 10, the run is really good. The next four, probably, I wouldn't jump in, but from game week 10 is really good.
fair enough, fair enough. And what's your thought on Cancelo? A lot of people are looking at him right now. I don't see it. I don't see him as nailed at
No,
the moment
Pep's
because we
fullbacks are a
had.
nightmare. I wouldn't go near that.
Exactly. And I just like to tell our listeners what happened this week was Walker played as center back and because Laporte wasn't fit and Pep did something tactically which is beyond my understanding at the moment. And Cancelo was sort of playing midfielder on the right-hand side. Now, when the standard formation comes back, I expect Walker to be playing on that right-hand side and which is why I'm not really sure if Cancelo is nailed. So I wouldn't go there at the moment, especially because you don't like to spend transfers in defense.
Exactly.
Then we have Palace and Brighton. I mean, they played out quite an anomaly of a game this weekend. It was astonishing. The only reason I think Brighton didn't score more goals is because of a certain player who I don't like, Neil Maupay. So many times in that game, he had the chance to play an incisive pass or shoot, and he didn't. There was this one point where the goal was in front of him, and he decided to dribble past the
Yeah,
defender, and had
I
no
know.
idea why he did that. That's one of the reasons why I don't quite like Neil Maupay as a pick, because he's going to get a lot of chances, but he isn't as good a player as he looks to be because he does the right thing, but his decision making isn't
It's terrible.
right. I thought Brighton could have had two or three goals in this game. He could have. There was this one point in the game where he could have passed easily to Eric. To Lamptey, who had the goal gaping in front of him. Again, he didn't pass, he just shot. And it was a terrible shot, which he took on the turn. So that's the reason why they didn't score more goals. But Brighton conceded zero shots and conceded a very, very, very soft penalty. I thought it wasn't a penalty. I
Yeah.
feel for them in that game. So do you still like? I love Lamptey as a 4.4 option. I think he's a play in every game except for when they're paying the Big six, and I don't even mind playing him in those games because his attacking threat is very visible at the moment. What are your thoughts with the Brighton defense?
I'll just touch upon Palace first. I thought the thing with Palace is very strange. They always seem to grind out a clean sheet despite looking under the cosh. But I think this year it's a little bit different. I mean, they had one shot all game that there was a penalty, and then they just sat back after. I don't think this is a sustainable strategy with the quality of attack now, and especially with the crowds gone, how much teams are attacking forward. So even though the fixtures are great, I don't really like their clean sheet prospects very much. I wouldn't want to
They've been
put.
doing it for the past 2, 3 years now,
I
and
know,
this
but
is the Roy
it just
Hodgson
feels
template.
like Burnley, like in the Palace. It seems like now they're sort of reaching the end of the line with this strategy. I'm not that confident. If I had to pick one from their defense, probably Cahill. I think Van Aanholt is too expensive. Guaita, in
Yeah, a
fact, is
lot of
probably
talk
the pick.
about.
I think just because of how friendly he is for bonus, he racks up saves. I like Guaita a lot in terms of keepers.
And Palace don't score that many goals, so he's on for bonus
Always
quite a few
on
of the
for
time.
bonus. But in general, I think they're better teams to invest in. Like Mitchell, probably the appeal of Mitchell was his price, but I think he's going to sit out the next game. He had a difficult time against Brighton. So
All
now
right.
let's talk about.
Yeah,
Sorry, go ahead.
I like Cahill as a pick. I don't see what you see when it comes to Palace. I expect them to keep a clean sheet one against the weaker teams for sure because that's how they play the game. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to grind out a few results. Let's look at the fixtures. Fulham, clean sheet possible. Wolves, clean
Away,
sheet
you think
possible.
away clean sheet to Fulham? I'm not so confident.
I don't know. I don't think it doesn't matter because Palace are going to sit. Park and grander results. And the big thing there is that Cahill is fit now. He is a much better defender than all the other options in that team, which is what even strengthens the case for the Palace defense. So I don't mind it as a 4.5 pick at all. I think you're going to get what you pay
Right,
for.
but
You're
let's
going to get
go
a
on. Let's
few.
look at that. After Fulham away, they have Wolves away. I don't think there's a clean sheet
Wolves
there.
away. Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe, but then you have Leeds again, a tough fixture. Burnley away,
Tough fixture.
Now Burnley at home, I know they kept a clean sheet last year, both teams sort of cancel each other out. Newcastle obviously is a good one. West Brom.
Yeah.
And then Spurs.
Yeah. See, yes, I see them keeping two clean sheets out of Burnley, Newcastle, West Brom as well. So I'm expecting sort of three odd clean sheets in the next six. And I think for 4.5, that's all right.
Yeah,
that's my thinking
right.
with Palin. The good thing about them, you know, because they're very predictable, you know what you're going to get out of that game. So that's why I like it as a steady 4.5 option.
But do they have Cahill used to have attacking threat at Chelsea. I don't see him really having that much at corners over there at Palace. I don't know what his role is.
Palace right now have no attacking threat. They haven't.
I'm talking about
set
piece threat at least. In terms of in Chelsea, he used to score a lot of goals from corners. So I don't know if you see him doing that at Palace more. Dan, in fact, seemed to be winning most of the headers there.
Yep. I'm just checking whether he scored any goals. Nothing last season.
Not
he played 2,100 minutes and no goals.
No goals. See, that's what I was talking about. Now getting to Lamptey. I was much more keen on him initially, but from what I've seen, I'm not so confident in Brighton's clean sheet prospects. Now, we know the Stephen Cocker principle, right? You don't play a defender or buy a defender purely for the attacking prospects of it. So, Brighton, I'm not so confident in their clean sheet prospects going forward. So, I'm not as bullish on Lamptey as you are.
But their defensive numbers are actually pretty good.
They are, and they were good last year as well. I mean, over the restart, I remember it was something strange. They had conceded the fewest shots in the box, but or the fewest big chances, and conceded the most goals. So
I thought the Palace result was a freak result. They totally deserved a clean sheet there, and they have a few fixtures again where they can keep clean sheets.
The fixtures
in the next three they're facing.
Yeah, I agree. There's West Brom, there's Burnley, which I like. Villa, not so much. A few. So I think maybe the next six, maybe two clean sheets, three clean sheets.
And they're a good team, right? I mean, because they're going to keep more possession than usual, the chances for them cleaning are also higher. I mean, they dominated both our teams when they played against us in terms of possession. So I think that's going to be the case when they play these slightly average middling teams as well, where they're going to keep a whole host of possession, which is where they're going to concede lesser chances. That's why I'm bullish on Lamptey. I think in my head, he's still the best 4.5 option to have at the moment.
I guess, but I think it's something we can touch upon later. What do you think in terms of 4.5 versus 5.5? I think that's a discussion we can have at the end.
All right. So the next team we have on the ticker, Newcastle, not interested. Liverpool.
I don't even know why they're so high up in the ticker, because you see they've got Wolves, Everton, Southampton, Chelsea in the next four.
Yeah.
I guess maybe because of the later fixtures.
Maybe because of the later fixtures, probably. But just right now, I think possibly the worst defensive team in the league at the moment. I mean, they made us look so much better than we actually are. In the previous game, they decided to just not play Park, and they weren't even defending too much. We had so much space. Bruno and Mata were just playing around with that Newcastle team. One of the reasons I'm thinking about holding on to my Wolves assets, despite Wolves not looking encouraging.
Yeah.
But
we'll touch on that later.
Southampton, what's your thinking there? Are you still interested in them?
It's a tough one because now I'm actually doubled up on Southampton. I have McCarthy and Walker Peters, who did well for me in game week 3 and 4. But the fixtures actually get quite stiff from here on. You have Everton, Villa, Newcastle, Wolves, United, Brighton. I see one clean sheet, maybe two from those.
Yeah.
So I did it. Now the thing with Walker Peters is he's really attacking. Even away to Chelsea, I could see him getting into the box, taking a shot, creating chances. So I'd like to look at it in isolation. I don't think my Walker Peters is a bad pick at all at 4.5. And just because I own McCarthy, it's not a reason that, like, you know, I should necessarily look to move Walker Peters on.
Fair enough. But are you looking to get rid of one of them in the next few?
I'm trying to get in a Wolves defender for the next few, so that I can cover those like fixtures. But I really don't know. Right now, I'm not prioritizing transfers in defense. So that he'll probably linger on.
Yeah, but I think like you, a lot of people started the season with two Saints defenders. I think now is a good time if you don't have any other problems to jump on.
Jump off. I agree.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah. West Ham next on the ticker. Oh, I was actually so surprised with their first 20 minutes of play against Spurs. Actually, how they played the last 75 minutes of the game is how I expected the game to go.
How we expected it.
I just think they were taken by surprise by Kane's beautiful pass in the first minute. And then Son is absolutely lethal right now. But that's it. I feel like you shouldn't let those 20 minutes cloud how defensively good they have been so far this season. They're still top three defense in the league for shots in the box and big chances conceded. And they've got two, three good options at priced at 5 million or cheaper. There's Masuaku and Kufal, who are playing the wingbacks on either side, who look really nailed. I thought, you know, Masuaku is somebody who I've been talking about on all pods, but I thought Kufal had a really good game as well. He was very attacking. He got in box more than Masuaku, if I remember the game correctly. And then there is Creswell, who's on set pieces as well. If I had to pick between these options, I just like the fact that Masuaku's on an average, we've seen him to be a decent player. He's created six chances. He's playing very high up the pitch. He's got more touches in the final third than the very popular Ayling and Dallas duo who've been talking about because of their attacking return. And I feel like they're defensively more stable than most of these other teams. So I really like Masuaku at that 4.5 press. Is there anyone you prefer out of the three?
For me, it's clearly Creswell. I think because it's a David Moyes team, right? They're always going to rely a lot on set pieces for their goals. You have your Suchek and your other big guys over there. And Creswell's delivery is really good. So for me, it's Creswell head and shoulders above the other two.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I don't mind that pick as well at all. I think he's a decent pick at 5 million. Then there is there's your boys, Chelsea, who've got some pretty decent fixtures in the next few weeks, especially from a defensive standpoint. I mean, after United, they have Burnley, Sheffield and Newcastle. I see two clean sheets here. Are you interested in Chilwell?
I am interested, but the problem is now with Chelsea defensively, we are very hard to read. Now, last year, as Lampard himself quoted in his press conference, only Man City conceded fewer shots than us, but we conceded as many away goals as Norwich. Now, that is absolutely shocking, and I don't think it's very easy to scapegoat Kepa. And Kepa sort of become like, you know, the figurehead, the person everyone's like the symbol is whatever you say, like, you know, the one everyone likes to blame. But I don't think he's the cause of it. I think it's more of a system issue which Lampard is failing to address. Our midfield is getting overrun on every counter attack. So for me personally, I wouldn't go near
Kante's not offering enough protection.
Kante is not being played in his right position. He doesn't have the right partner alongside him. I mean, I'm not a football expert or a manager, so I can't tell you what. But I really want clean sheets. For me, Antonio Conte, his style, like, you know, grind out the 1-0, 2-0. I was watching the video of Conte's from earlier, and he was very clear about that. When you win with a clean sheet, that's what gives the team confidence. And now the comments you see from Havertz and Werner also after the game, I think Werner said something that defense wins you titles. I don't know how we conceded six goals, blah, blah, blah. So that confidence is really shakes up the entire team. So I wouldn't go near our defense personally.
I'm surprising because I actually like Chilwell the most amongst the 5.5.
I mean, it's only Chilwell. I think you could, there are a lot of people who are asking about Zuma, Thiago Silva, Ian Azpilicueta. I wouldn't go near those guys at all. If you do want to get an attacking defender, let's say you want to downgrade TAA to somebody attacking, then I would probably go for Chilwell.
Yeah, it's a fixture play in my head. And I think they will start to keep clean sheets because the game where Thiago Silva actually played, y'all looked, it was Palace, but
exactly.
Y'all looked
you
really...
You can't really say anything
y'all
against
didn't...
Palace. They showed no ambition whatsoever.
But those are the kind of teams your guys are going to be playing. And now, you know, all the good guys are playing for Chelsea. So you guys are going to keep a majority, lots of possession, a lot of the ball because the good guys are back in the team. The only problem is, like you mentioned, Lampard. But one other factor that I like to mention here is that left side is going to be a little overloaded. Now, Pulisic is going to be playing there. Werner, we know, likes to drift in. But Chilwell is absolutely... He reminds me of Alonso from 2 years back in terms of the sheer attacking presence he has in the box. So many times when there is a cross also from the right-hand side, Chilwell's in the box to take a shot. So I quite like that. I think he's bombing forward in terms of attack. And now we're going to have Hakim Ziyech playing on that right-hand side. And we all know about his deep cross and how good he is from the right-hand side, which is one of the reasons why I'm looking at Chilwell even more. I like him. I think, in fact, it's between Dias and him for the 5.5 million options. And if I had to pick one, I'd go Chilwell. I just like that pick.
That's a fair point. But just keep in mind, against Southampton, he got a bit more room than he usually would because of how forward Kyle Walker-Peters was getting. So,
Fair enough. But in the previous game, he was pretty further forward.
That was Palace.
What's
going to be interesting is the next game against Man U, how he does, the games against Spurs, stuff like that. I want to see how much freedom he's given.
Yeah, but before the Spurs game, he's got Burnley, Sheffield and Newcastle. I like his odds. I mean, I see a double-digit haul in that game and a clean sheet. Yeah, why not?
I hope so.
All right, moving on to Leeds. Now, this is a team that has been splitting opinions in terms of the defensive ability. Any thoughts? Right now, we'll just talk about the defenders. Who you prefer between Ayling and Dallas, and whether you like the Leeds defense?
It's a bit strange because we have two contrasting stats, which we'll get into later on in the pod. But in terms of Ayling versus Dallas, I still prefer Ayling. I think from open play, his average positions are much better. And I still think after 4.5, they offer decent value.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk in terms of Dallas is going to play a few games out of position. But I saw the Wolves-Leeds game yesterday. And Ayling just seems like the better player in terms of quality he has, in terms of the shots he was taking, in terms of the risks he was taking, in terms of how often he was getting onto that side, in terms of the quality of his crosses. I thought he's just a quality player and he looks much better than Dallas. And if I was to pick a Leeds defender, I'm quite still split. I mean, a lot of people were talking about the Wolves-Leeds game and how Leeds did not give a sniff to Wolves in the first half. It's exactly how Nuno wanted this game to play out. And Leeds did look a little tired and shaken in the second half. And Wolves got more than a few chances in the second half. And I thought they played really well. I thought this is exactly... Nuno would have said at the 90th minute that this is how the game went. And it went according to plan. This is exactly how I wanted it to go. So I'm not really sure about the Leeds defense yet, because they... Wolves had a few good chances, not like, you know, small chances. They had pretty big chances. So I'm not yet confident about that Leeds defense. But if I had to pick one, and based on attacking threat, Ayling is the one that I like over Dallas.
Like, I think it's more of a case of don't buy, don't sell with their assets. I wouldn't be rushing in to buy Ayling for sure.
I agree. Coming to Wolves now, because that's the defensive unit that I really like. I really liked what I saw from them from a defensive standpoint yesterday. They were, Leeds put a lot of pressure on Wolves, and they were a defensively stubborn unit who defended well. Also combined with the fact that Leeds just didn't show enough quality in the final third. I think that's because of the players that they have. But Wolves were able to sustain and defend that pressure off. And there are a few options emerging. We might have a 4.0 million defender coming out of Wolves. I saw the game, Kilman. He played really well. He was officially the man of match in the game as well. And based on merit and his performance the last two games, when Marcel or the other young kid that's playing on that side come, I'm not sure if Sice is going to get that position center back again. And a lot of people are talking about Sice and jumping onto that pick. I'm just... My thinking with defenders is you need to be 100% certain when you're picking a defender in terms of Neil Nonnes. We were having a conversation earlier in the day and you were looking at Sice as an option. And I was like, I just don't like that pick right now because I don't know his... I'm not 100% sure he's going to keep his position in the team given Kilman's performance. And he's not a natural wing back. Like, I thought he was personally struggling in the game against Leeds. He could have had a goal and assist, but you don't look at... You don't judge the FPL returns that he could have gotten in that game. Is he going to keep his position in the team? And that is something I'm worried about. So I wouldn't go near Sice. I wouldn't pick him still because I'm not sure if he's going to keep his position. But Kilman is somebody I'm very, very interested in Formula. If the FPL gods are gifting us a Formula and Wolves defender, you must jump.
Yeah, and I think we got... we had somebody, one of our listeners was kind enough to listen to the podcast from Tim Spears. Thanks, Jigar, for that. So, for a little background on Spears, this is the guy I messaged on Twitter before the first deadline asking him who's going to start at left wing back, Marcel or Vinagre. And he was very clear that it's going to be Marcel, and he was right. So I take what he says with Wolves as pretty much gospel. Yeah. And he's quite keen on Kilman.
He's the athletic correspondent for Wolves, as we understand.
Yep, exactly. So he thinks Kilman is nailed as can be. It's his shirt to lose now. He needs to either get injured or have like two or three horror shows for him to be out of the team. So that's as much endorsement as I need to invest, really. Now, Sice is an interesting one because you look at him, he doesn't really look like a wing back, does he? He looks like your rugged, typical big center back. So over the last two games, playing at left wing back, he has created one chance in 180 minutes. So there's definitely some lack of attacking output on that side. And now, I don't know now, it's interesting because the next two fixtures are against teams that are probably going to sit deeper. They're going to need a bit more creative edge from him. So I don't know.
Marcel came on in the previous game. So I won't be surprised to see him starting this game. That's why I want to judge.
Okay. Did Marcel come on for Sice or for somebody else?
he came on for somebody else. They added on an extra defender.
Added on an extra defender. That's what I thought. So now see, the tricky thing is now Marcel doesn't really offer much going forward himself. He is also essentially a left center back. And the thing is Nuri kid is quite young. I don't think he's going to be thrown in straight away. So I do think despite his lack of attacking potential in terms of chances created, I think Saiss's spot is safe for the next 4-5 games.
Fair enough. I just feel like when it comes to that Marcel versus Saiss conversation, I think Nuno might go for Leeds was a different sort of game. That's why I didn't throw Marcel in this game. I won't be surprised if we see Marcel starting the next game because he's just naturally... He's a more natural wingback. That's all. When I see Saiss playing in that wingback position, he just doesn't look right in that position to me. So I'm worried about that pick at the moment.
That's fair.
All right, let's talk about Spurs and Arsenal. Both good teams, both fairly interesting from a defensive standpoint as well. What are your thoughts on Reguilon? I put in a beautiful cross for Kane against West Ham. What are your thoughts there?
I think Reguilon is a decent pick. I think, but their fixtures, I think they're good for the next three, but I think the best fixtures are actually behind them. I don't think that, let's look at who they're playing next. I'm just looking for Spurs here. Spurs. Arsenal.
They've got Burnley, Brighton and West Brom. And so, then they have City, Chelsea, Arsenal.
Yeah, see, so the City, Chelsea, Arsenal, again, that kind of puts me off because you're playing for attacking returns over there. So I wouldn't go near Reguilon yet. And I think he's pretty nailed in terms of what he offers. In terms of he's a huge upgrade on Davies. Davies will probably be used in the Europa League more. But I think in terms of fixtures, the next few are good, but long term the outlook isn't as great, so I wouldn't go there yet.
Yeah. So my thinking is with Mourinho, right? You don't really... A good fixture, a tough fixture is not really a bad fixture because Mourinho is the king of, seeing off such games. But my problem with Spurs is that... Which are the weakest spots in that team? They've upgraded their wingbacks. Both look decent. They've upgraded their midfield. Højbjerg is providing a decent enough protection to the defense.
Yeah, he's been a great transfer for them.
Great transfer, playing so well, shielding that defense. But my problem is with the center backs of the team. Now, Toby is the only center back who I rate in that team. Eric Dier hasn't cut it for me. Doesn't cut it for me. And I don't rate Davinson Sanchez as an elite tier defender as well. That's my problem with the Reguilon pick. And that's why I prefer Chilwell to Reguilon because he's got better fixtures. I rate Thiago Silva as a defender and I don't rate the Spurs center backs. That's my thing.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it over here on our notes that you like Chilwell over Reguilon, who you like over Dean. I think I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, the only person who tempts me instead of Chilwell is Dias at the moment. But it's just more fun to pick somebody who has some attacking threat as well. Okay. This is a little under the radar pick flying. And our friend from the chat, the Hungry Man, brought him to my attention. And that's Bellerin. Because he's playing as a wing back. And Arteta sort of is playing... He's sort of a glorified Son Dash in terms of how he's setting up his team. It's a defense-first approach there. So what's your thinking with the Arsenal defense?
I do think they're much more solid defensively under Arteta and the fixtures aren't as bad. You have Leicester who are completely all over the shop right now. United, they'd probably concede. Then you have Villa, Leeds, Wolves, Spurs, Burnley, Southampton. And I think at 5 million, that's a decent pick.
Yeah, very. And they got a few games where I see a few clean sheets.
Yes.
That's a good pick. I'm just not sure about Bellerin's attacking threat because Arsenal themselves are just not creating... too much.
That's true.
When it comes to attacking impetus. So I wish Saka was a defender this season as well because he's really impressed me. In fact, he looks the sharpest and the most threatening Arsenal player in attack from what I've seen so far. I thought he had a really good game this weekend as well, last weekend as well. And he's just impressing me. Great player. Big future.
I agree.
So just, we've spoken about all the options that are there. In the premium bracket, who's your most favorite pick at the moment?
Probably Chilwell of the lot. But there's nobody that really I feel like, seasons past, you've gone at Doherty and be like, oh, I really need this guy. This guy's a set and forget in my team. I think besides TA, there's nobody I really look at that who I think that I need to
and Robertson.
And Robertson, of course. But there's nobody this season who really jumps out that I need to own this guy.
What about Semedo? Semedo is somebody you suggest. I'm happy he's sticking along. Wolves
I'm happy
he's
sticking
around,
but I think it needs a little bit more time to get settled. I don't think he was attacking too much the last game, but that might have been a tactical thing. I'm more interested to see how he does against these two weaker teams next, Palace and Newcastle.
I'm very happy to hold him. I see no reason to shift him out at the moment.
Definitely no reason to hold him. I think he's a great pick.
Who's your favorite from the budget defenders? 5 million or lesser?
5 million or lesser, let me think.
Got
probably
the
one of the
boys,
Villa lads. I think in terms of the purely because of the fixture play, Konsa.
Fair enough. And what about Burnley? Burnley doesn't interest you still?
Let me have a look at Burnley's fixtures again. I don't think, the fixtures next are Spurs, Chelsea, Brighton, Palace, City, Everton, Arsenal. So that's probably one clean sheet in the next seven, so no.
Yeah, I agree with you. For me, the picks to have in the 4.5 bracket are Lamptey and one of the Villa boys. And I'm quite interested in Michael Keane as a 5 million.
It's a shame
that
Sheffield aren't on the radar anymore. Like they were last year, they were pretty much Baldock, Stevens. They were pretty much set and forget picks.
My issue, the problem is that they lost O'Connell, who is, according to the fans, their best defender. And it's a huge loss to that team. And they are clearly struggling in defense, which is visible. Also, Wilder's tactics were sort of new, right? And now people have seen Sheffield and adapting and learning how to play against them, so which is a factor there. And they have Liverpool, City and Chelsea in the next three games. Troubling times for that team at the moment. Do you see Wilder pulling them out of the mess? Because I rate the manager. I think he's a really good manager. What are your thoughts there?
I think they won't get relegated, but they won't hit anywhere near the heights of last season. They won't get relegated purely because I think there are three teams worse than them.
Fair enough. All right, moving on to the next hot topic, which is Kane versus the other strikers. We've got a flurry of questions in terms of whether people want to go for Kane, what about Aguero? We have FPL SOS asking us, while everyone's jumping on Kane, who's owned by 31% of the game, is there merit in opting for Aguero, who's owned only by 1.7% of the game? The same question can be asked for Son versus Sterling. And the next question he asks is, now, if you were to go for Kane or Aguero, would you lose DCL, Ings or Jimenez? All three of them have decent fixtures and have done well so far. Another question is from Rishi Segal _96. Is it okay to rip your team up for Spurs? Some managers have Jimenez, Sterling and Trent. That's me as well, Rishi. Playing against weak teams in the next two. And we have MJ, FPL Fanatics, who had a great season last year. Does Timo to Kane have merits despite both hauling this game week? Felt like I've gotten away by having Timo so far, but is Kane a more consistent option? What are your thoughts there?
There's a quote from Wayne Gretzky I really like, that's skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it has been. So there's an argument to be made that you possibly missed the boat in terms of Spurs' big hauls so far, but I don't think it necessarily applies in this situation because you look at Kane and the underlying numbers he's producing now. We've got the striker stats up here. He's second for shots in the box only to Calvert-Lewin and Mitrovic. In terms of big chances, he is second only to Calvert-Lewin. And in terms of shots on target, he's the best in the league. So in terms of shots, he's the best in the league. So these are the numbers we used to see from Kane back in the day. Now, Sam mentioned this in her article for The Scout, that the signing of Højbjerg has allowed Kane to really like not have to drift deep as much. So he's able to get into more attacking positions. So whether you should rip up your team or not is really a very difficult question. Now, this question is going to be asked with different players at different situations this season because there are just so many good options. You can't really have them all. And today you could have Kane who's firing. Next week you could have City who's firing. Then you have Chelsea who's firing. So I think it's to a certain extent that you can really pick and stick with who you've got. Now, do you need to sell Sterling to get Kane? I don't think so. But
sell Werner to get Kane?
Again, that's a tough one. Again, that's purely a fixture play. Now, you look at the next two. Now, Werner plays United and Burnley. I don't see as many returns now for Werner as I do for Kane now, who has Brighton and Burnley and then West Brom after. So I would shift Werner to Kane, yes.
His fixtures aren't that bad. There's United and I actually wouldn't be surprised if he gets a goal against United as well, because I don't think we are defensively looking good at all at the moment. And then there's Burnley, Sheffield and Newcastle. They're not looking like good defences to
that's
me.
True. It's a very tough one, really. There's no reason to... So it's the same discussion we were having earlier regarding Sterling. There's no reason to sell Sterling. There's no reason to sell Werner. But you just want Kane. And this is a situation, I guess, we have to learn a lot of self-control over this season because you really can't have them all.
And I don't think this is the first time we're going to face this issue as well. I'm struggling with it because I have Jimenez. And the problem I have, the only way I definitely am not selling Timo Werner for Harry Kane, because I feel like the shrewd move is to hold on to your Chelsea assets right now because the big boys are finally coming. The team that we anticipated Chelsea to be, it's happening now. And I thought they had a really good first half against City. A lot of good interplay. They were all over Southampton in that first half. And I expect them to have such good spells in the next few games as well. The thing with Kane, though, is there is no logical, rational reason to have him. He looks unplayable at the moment. He's got assist threat, goal threat, pens. We all know about that. And he's not even taking that many shots from inside the box. If he took shots from inside the box, I would expect all of them to go him, because the shots he's taking from outside the box are so, so good at the moment. He just seems like he's at the peak of his powers. And so I'm struggling with that decision, because if I were to get Kane, I need to sell Jimenez for him. Now, if it was a straight up move to sell Jimenez for Kane, despite Jimenez's good fixture this week, I'd do it. But in my case, I have to either downgrade a Raheem Sterling or a Timo Werner or a Trent Alexander-Arnold, who all have pedigree and decent fixtures, to make that switch. And I don't know if it's viable, you know. So that's the only thing. It's very specific to your team. If you have an easy route to get Kane at the moment, get him. You know, there's this question also about Aguero versus Kane. Now, I am the biggest lover of Sergio Aguero there is, and I'm still struggling with this. I'm not getting him at the moment because there are so many arguments against him. You know, are City going to play? Is Aguero going to play 3 games a week right now with Jesus not playing? They have Champions League every midweek at the moment. That said, when you have a Sergio Aguero at 10.4 million, it's the cheapest he's ever been. Under 2% ownership, we're talking about the most explosive asset in the game right now. If on this podcast, if I was to recommend you to, you know, go for an Aguero over Kane, it would be the wrong thing to do because Kane is already at the peak of his powers. But the thing I'd like to address here is sometimes you play this game for fun. Sometimes you do have love affairs and attachments with a few players. I was having a conversation with my wife yesterday while we were just chilling and watching the television. And I was telling her that I'm having this dilemma in my head where Kane is doing really well. He's at the peak of his powers. And then there's Aguero. This is a head versus heart decision. She said, go ahead, have fun. He's your guy. He served you well. What's the worst that will happen? You'll lose a few points, but he's your guy. So sometimes you play this game for fun. And if you have that love affair with a certain Sergio Aguero, do it. Because he's not a bad pick, Aguero. He's just not as good a pick on paper as Kane right now. So that's my situation there. At the moment, I haven't made up my mind in terms of what to do. Every hour, my opinion changes. But the logical, rational, correct thing on paper to do is to get Kane. But I wouldn't sell a Werner for it. I would sell an Ings or a Jimenez. Ings doesn't have that many good fixtures at the moment. And Kane definitely has better fixtures. So I would sell an Ings or a Jimenez if it was a straight-up move and if the compromise wasn't too big. But if you're compromising too many things, then hold on.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's my thing.
There's no easy answer. And I mean, people have been questioning us, asking us for a straight yes or no answer. There's no really straight yes or no. This is the definite thing to do.
And this is not the first time we're going to not have these difficult moves right now. I mean, all the big hitters came through this weekend. The reason I got 91 points without Spurs assets shows you what the course of the season is going to be in terms of there's a lot of good assets. I mean, you're talking about players like Mane, who has had fabulous numbers, who's looked really good, and he's still under 10% ownership. So there's going to be so many options this season. So it depends on your team. If the compromise is not too big, go for Kane because he is a really good pick. But if the compromise is big, then wait and watch. That's
it. Also depends
on
your style, like you said. Like, you know, if you want to be more aggressive, then Aguero is definitely the more aggressive, higher ceiling play.
Exactly. 2% ownership. But see, we'll actually move into the next segment because I think that addresses this as well, which is how polarizing this season can be and how to deal with it, because a lot of people are also getting affected in terms of mental health and everything. We've had this conversation earlier as well. We had this question from FPL Batman. There was talk at the start of the season about the sheer number of big hitters available. Is this now playing out in form of massive hauls from all directions and us finding ourselves being in a position where it's impossible to own all of them? How do you deal with this? Hindu Monkey also asked, he agreed with the question and he said, I would echo this. As we've already seen with so many big scores this week, if you're at the wrong end of them, it's crippling. The swings are enormous. Will this continue? And we have Stadium of Sports asking us. Thank you, by the way, Stadium of Sports. He did a really nice review on our podcast this week on Twitter. So shout out to you. He's asked us, mental health is very important for me. Could you talk about what you do when you have bad weeks? I think it's very helpful to the community. I remember on a previous podcast, you mentioned talking to your father over dinner and he gave you advice. Be great to hear more. What's your thinking in terms of the polarizing season and how do you deal with this?
One decision I made this season was not to play in any cash mini leagues. And I think that has helped me cope with it a lot better because there's no tangible loss or any tangible gain. Earlier, if I was in a mini league, I'd see guys who are like, you know, if I was in second or third position, I'd also sort of, to an extent, alter my strategy according to those guys. Like, let's say if somebody in the first spot, he owned Kane, I'd probably not buy him. So I think it's helped me cope with it a lot better because I look at it primarily as a game. It's a game of probability. I look at it as something that provides me engagement and escape, especially with today, everything that's going on outside in terms of work, in terms of the pandemic and everything. So I don't really get upset in terms of a green arrow or if I do badly or not. It's just ultimately I want some engagement and like my players all delivered. So I still had a good weekend in terms of watching football and I'm not really upset about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've been playing this game for almost 10 years now and you need to, I mean, we can't be sitting here and telling everybody else not to take it so seriously, but that is the truth of it. You don't take it so seriously because it's a game. And if it seems to be bothering you, you can, you know, I feel like you can tailor your strategy around that. Now, if you think you have the capacity to go for a differential like Aguero and deal with the fact that Kane, who's owned by half the game and everybody on social, getting a hat-trick and Aguero getting a blank. If you think you have the capacity to deal with that, then go for the explosive differential pick because it depends on your personality as well and whether you're thick-skinned enough to deal with something like that. And if you don't, then play the numbers. Kane is a great pick and there is no reason to not go with the crowd. And you won't really feel bad if a Sergio Aguero who's a differential hauls because he's not owned by that many people in the game. So you need to tailor your game as well depending on your personality style and whether you get affected by these things. But just don't get affected by it too much. Just remember it's a game. And that's all there is to it. And this is not going to be the last time this is going to happen. We're going to face a lot of polarizing weeks just because of the sheer scale of options that are there in this game. Now, I really like that as an FPL manager because there are so many more opportunities to gain an advantage over the crowd. Yeah, it can go against you, but I just find it very interesting in terms of the FPL season that's going to play out. So, yeah, don't take it. And another point that I'd like to pay is just make sure you have another hobby. Like, let's say you had a shitty game week and someone popular has scored a hat trick and you don't own him. Just switch off from your socials. Watch something you like. Spend some time with your friends or family. Like, make sure you have other hobbies. Just switch off. It's as simple as that. And when you wake up the next day, the damage isn't there in terms of mental health. So just switch off that night.
So somebody asked, do you enjoy football less or more with FPL? What's your perspective?
Definitely more. And that's because, I mean,
that's why we continue when I saw the question, I said, if I enjoyed it less, I'd stop playing right away. So pretty simple.
Yeah, this happened to me. So if I'm talking about, you know, my FPL history as well, there were two seasons where I, you know, had three back-to-back seasons where I had really good seasons. And then I started to think that, oh, I'm Mr. Know-it-all. And I, there's no way I can do bad in this game or whatever. And you start to think in an incorrect manner. And then I had a season where I finished at 50,000. And that's the best season I had in terms of learning because you learn to laugh at yourself. You learn to realize that it's a game. Don't really take yourself so seriously or just making some predictions which are based on a fair amount of luck. And some of them are coming through. We just, it's sort
variance.
Of a nitro
boost.
You can
be on the wrong end of variance on any week.
Think about it as
it's happened to you.
A nitro boost
fact,
that helps you enjoy the game.
It's happened to That's you, it. I think, in week 4. You were on the wrong end of variance with those Semedo chances, etc., etc. So,
yeah. And I'm sitting here podding, smiling, putting a smile on my face, and I'm really enjoying it because I like, it's just football, right? We like talking about football, we like talking about sport, and I don't take this so seriously. I understand that people might get affected, especially with so much exposure to social media. So switch off would be my advice if you're having a bad week and can't handle it, but just realize it's a game.
Absolutely. Should we move on to the team discussion? Touch on Wolves?
Yes. Yeah, let's touch on Wolves. So we spoke about the defenders earlier. What are your thoughts on their attacking options, Podence and Jimenez?
So I'll just share some stats which we have over here. In terms of minutes per chance created, I think they're ranked 7th, which is quite poor. Now, going back to the podcast where Jigar was kind enough to like share with us the contents of. Now, he mentioned that the first half of games, now Wolves are not committing players to attack. They're just focusing on not conceding, absorbing the pressure. And only in the second half are they really starting to commit men forward. So I think that will change a little bit given the next few opponents, Palace and Newcastle. We should see an uptick over there. And for some strange reason, he's not been playing Traore as much as last season. I think he was benched for the 2 games in a row now. I don't know what's happening there. Maybe this was because he played some minutes for Spain. So in terms of attack, the numbers really aren't very good, but they weren't very good last year either. They weren't this bad, but they weren't really that good last year either.
Yeah, you wouldn't go for... Yeah, Jimenez is a case of a... Don't buy for sure in my head.
I mean, Jimenez stats in particular, I'll just show you his stats now. He's taken 15 shots in 5 matches. He was ranked 7th. He's 9th for big chances. That's 4. He's 8th for shots on target, which is 6. And he's created 1 chance all year. Now, last year, he created 42 chances. Only Firmino created more. That's in 32 games. And he was top amongst all forwards for shots. That's 96. So there's definitely something off there, don't you think?
It's team chemistry, right? I mean, he was used to having a lot of link-up play and interplay.
I think
Doherty is somebody
who's really missing, yeah.
Doherty and Jota, I mean, he's played with these players for a long time, right? And now you're linking up with new players. It takes time for team chemistry to build. But I'll tell you what, though. I don't mind holding on to him right now, especially given the performance of Newcastle that we saw against United. And, they have had spells where they played really good football. I thought for 30-odd minutes against Leeds, they played really good football. I thought in Sprouts against Man City, they played really good football. So there is potential, and I see value in holding on. They have good fixtures for the next few games, if I remember. They have Newcastle at home, Crystal Palace at home, Leicester away, and Southampton at home. I can see Jimenez getting 2 or 3 goals in these games. I can see him getting a goal and an assist in the next game against Newcastle because of how poor they are. So I'd be not inclined to sell Jimenez so soon. And then about Podence as well. The only issue I have with Podence is his minutes because of the threat to rotation that you mentioned in terms of Traore. But what I've seen of him, and I think I have a feeling that Nuno recognizes, he's just a really good player. I thought he was growing into the game. In the second half, the first 25, 30 minutes before he got subbed off, he was Wolves' most dangerous player. He looked really sharp. He could have had a brace in terms of the chances he had against that Leeds team yesterday as well. So I'm very happy to be patient with him and give him that Newcastle game. There's a chance he could be benched, but at 5.5, that ceiling is pretty good for Podence in that game. So I wouldn't sell him just yet.
Fair enough.
And I feel like they will grow. The chemistry is developing. I'm seeing more and more with Wolves at the moment. So yeah.
Tim Spears also said that you think it's going to take a while for the team to just blend in with all these new guys. Neto, Podence, Semedo.
What are your thoughts on Leeds now? That's the next team we are going to be focusing on.
I've got the defensive stats over here. No team has conceded more shots in the box than Leeds, but they've conceded only 9 big chances. That's the same number as Wolves. So it's a bit of a strange read over there. In terms of attack, I still like Bamford. I think he'll continue to keep getting chances. I think in that sub 6 million price bracket, he's probably the outstanding pick. I was hoping somebody in their midfield becomes a good option, but I just don't see it at the moment. It seems really spread out in terms of the opportunities and the chances they create. Do you like anyone?
Yeah, I saw the game.
In particular?
I mean, if Rodrigo was nailed, I'd like him because I thought he looked like the most dangerous attacker in terms of quality. With Leeds, the thing is, From the game yesterday, from what I could gauge, I thought the wing backs, Ealing and Dallas, looked as attacking as their wingers because of just how far they push up. So if I were to be interested in a Leeds pick at the moment, it'd be those wing backs and nobody else. I feel like with time though, Rafinha and Rodrigo, who are quality players who know where the back end of a goal is, they might emerge as standout picks just because of the quality of the players they are. But it will take some time because we know how training-driven Bielsa's team is at the moment. And I'm not really... I'm put off by Pamford also, if I'm fairly honest, because the goals, the attacks seem to be spread. And I just feel like, you know, we're talking about Costa or Bamford. I feel like they don't have that much quality in the final third at the moment to take advantage of so many chances that they have. So if I were to be interested in a Leeds player right now, I'd be looking at the wingbacks and I'd wait for a Rafinha or a Rodrigo to emerge, who are known qualities and, you know, they have a certain skill set where they can finish off the chances that the team is creating.
Yeah, so really shame in midfield there's nobody, because I know we had our eyes on Harrison early on, but I don't think he can be relied upon week in, week out.
No, in the game yesterday, he wasn't in the box at all. He was just holding the line and crossing it in. In fact, Dallas was making more runs inside the box than Harrison at the moment. So, yeah, I'm a bit put off from their attacking assets. They look great. They're fun to have, but there isn't a standout pick at the moment.
But I'm also struggling to read now whether they're a good fixture defensively or a poor fixture based on the last two games. Now, they've restricted both City and Wolves to one goal each. So, are they really a team? When I look at Leeds, do I look at it as a good defense fixture or do I look at it as a tough game? What do you think?
Do you think, let's say,
you have now somebody playing Leeds, do you think that that's a captainable fixture?
It is a cap. I feel like teams with quality will be able to take advantage of when they are playing Leeds. Again, we saw the City game. City had a lot of chances. It's that they were tired. I thought Wolves had 4 or 5 decent openings in the second half as well. It is a captainable fixture for the really premium teams. Now, that said, I wouldn't captain maybe a United player, but if a Liverpool
Of course, team, we said decent teams.
Yeah. Just people who are going to control possession. I feel like if a United is playing Leeds, I'd worry that United would just crumble under pressure because our defenders are so useless at the moment, you know. And I don't know if you're capable of absorbing so much pressure like a Wolves are at the moment in terms of defense. So that's my thinking. But I feel like really premium attacks will be capable of taking advantage against that Leeds team.
Right, because why I asked that, because for Villa, the team we're going to discuss next, they're playing Leeds. Now, I'm wondering now, is that a good fixture for Villa or is that a tough fixture for Villa?
It's both. I feel like Leeds will still give Villa a few openings and they won't be small chances. They'll be fairly big chances because Villa have quality in their midfield at the moment. They won't score a lot against Leeds, but I do see them getting 4 or 5 big chances, out of which they might take advantage in 1 or 2 chances at the moment. I'm very conflicted when it comes to Leeds because the chances they're conceding are fairly big chances.
Exactly. That's what I can't get a read on the fixture. Now, when I see Leeds pop up for one of my attackers, do I look at it as a good fixture? Do I look at it as a tough fixture? I still don't know yet.
I'd still play any of my attackers
Definitely would. But now when I see that in the fixture tick in the next three, do I look at it? Oh, yeah, this is a good fixture. I can target this. I'm not sure yet.
I still see it as a good fixture. It's a fixture I'm interested in.
I would definitely see it towards as a good fixture, but maybe not as much as we thought after the Liverpool game in week one.
Fair enough. That's a fair read, in my opinion.
Let's move on to Villa.
So, I mean, my opinion with Villa hasn't changed. It's where I was in terms of last weekend as well. I feel like all three of them, the options that are there, and we've spoken about the defense, so let's not go there again. Hmm. But in terms of attack, Grealish is going to offer value for 7.1 million. He's spending a lot of time in that final third. Barkley is going to offer you value for his price because he's not going to score as many points as Grealish is. But just because of the sheer quality that Jack Grealish has. But Barkley is just a very, very selfish player. And he's going to take on shots like he did in that final minute against Leicester, and he's going to just be very, very selfish, and he's on a few set pieces. So I like his price, which is 5.9, and he's going to offer you value for 5.9. And Watkins for me is one of the standard options in the sub 6 million bracket. In fact, he's my favorite option if you were to go for a cheap forward at the moment, especially because of the fixtures that Aston Villa have. So all three picks are good in my opinion, based on your team structure and how what suits your team. I think, but I would say one thing, I don't see Villa scoring that many goals despite the chances that they have had. So I wouldn't double up on a Villa attacker. Just pick one and stick with it.
I agree with you. Now, Barkley is top amongst all mids for shots over the last 2 weeks and third for shots in the box. He does like a shot. But in terms
of ranking, trigger happy.
He's trigger happy. Like, in terms of ranking, I would say probably Grealish is still the big dog. Barkley, now I would still take Barkley over Watkins. So I would say Grealish, Barkley and Watkins for me.
Why is that? That's interesting. Why would you go for Barkley over Watkins? Because Watkins is going to get, he's a good player. He's going to get a chunk of the big chances.
From what I've seen, like the Fulham game is in fact the game that sort of put me off Watkins so much. Because just the way the attack structured, he was drawing defenders away, occupying them to allow more space for Grealish. So I think Barkley, just because of how explosive he is in terms of his routes to points, how greedy he is, I think he offers more.
Fair. Interesting. Not sure. If I had to pick one for 5.9, I'd still go Watkins, but it depends on the structure.
I think he's at 6 now, but it does depend on the structure.
Yeah. My thinking is that even in terms of FPL, I think there are a lot more explosive forwards in the game right now. So that's why I'd probably go for a Barkley over Grealish, because I wouldn't feel right going for a cheap forward at the moment. And in 2 or 3 weeks, Antonio's opening up as a cheap forward as well, given his fixture. So that's where I'd look in a few weeks. That's all we have in terms of the three teams we are looking at. What's next on the agenda?
Captains and fixtures. So let's touch on the fixtures and we can take the captains from there.
All right, so we talk about Liverpool versus Sheffield United at the first. I'm expecting Poole to... I feel like Sheffield have problems. Mitrovic could have braced against that Sheffield United team if he was to have
I could not believe the amount of chances they conceded. This is not the same team from last year.
Yeah, like normally I'm confused in terms of captaincy. This week I have no doubt in my head that Mo Salah or Sadio Mane are the standout captaincy options. Sheffield United numbers are bad in defense. They don't really look that convincing, and this is the kind of fixture where I expect Liverpool to just run past them. I'm expecting them to win by 2 or 3 goals at least.
I agree. Not much to add over there. Straightforward.
Mane is a great differential option as well. You know, he's owned by under 10%. He's looked really sharp. I thought, in fact, against Everton, he looked sharper than Mo Salah. So I don't mind that differential captaincy shout in this game at all.
Absolutely.
We are going to talk about Burnley versus Spurs next, but this is something I want to talk about as well. Now, we have a standout captaincy option this week in terms of Mo Salah. And that's also one of the reasons maybe where you have to make a lot of compromises to get a certain Harry Kane. You don't do it if you're set on Mo Salah as a captaincy option. So that is something that is influencing my thinking as well.
That's a good point, because I don't think really Kane away to Burnley is a captain option this week.
I feel like Mo Salah versus Sheffield is the better pick by a fair distance.
I agree.
So yeah. Burnley versus Spurs. How do you see that game going? I mean, yeah, Burnley. When does Ben Mee come back, by the way? I mean, I haven't heard about
it. Not anytime. Not before this international break, that's for certain. I haven't been following it too closely, but I know he's out at least till the next international break.
Yeah, because I was watching the Burnley-West Brom game as well, unfortunately.
I feel sorry.
And Burnley looked not as tight as they always have. So I am worried about this game not owning any Spurs attackers at the moment. That could change when we come to Friday. But I think Spurs have more than enough in them. One other thing is that I thought that Bergwijn didn't do anything against West Ham. He didn't offer any threat on that side. And I feel like when Bale comes, the Spurs attack becomes a lot more potent. I see Spurs winning this by 2 or 3 goals as well.
And Kane has good history in this fixture. I remember he got a hat-trick, I think, a couple of seasons ago. Maybe two, three seasons ago.
I looked into it. I think he's got something like 7 goals and 1 assist in 8 games against Burnley. It was Mourinho's first game also, if you remember. That goal of the season, which Heung-Min Son scored last season, where he ran from his own half. That was against Burnley as well. They scored 5 goals in that game. Yeah. Final, I remember.
Yep. So he knows at least
good
how
history
to play
as well. So good captaincy option. I just happened to think that Liverpool are a better captaincy option this week.
I would agree.
What about West Ham versus Man City? How do you see that game playing out?
I think now Man City will be a little bit buoyed after the injury to Van Dijk. I think now they realize that the title really is theirs to lose. So I expect them to put on a show this weekend. And they've always done well on that big pitch at the West Ham Stadium. It allows them a lot of space. And I think Pep knows how to play against a back three. I think this is going to be an easy win for City despite West Ham's improvement. 3-0 City.
Yep. 3-0 City. And I see the same sort of result as you do. I see City winning by a huge margin, which actually there are 5 to 6 standout captaincy options this week. If you really think about it, the Saleh-Mane duo, we have Kane and Son as captaincy options as well. Sterling is a good captaincy option. Aguero for the ones who fancy a differential. All six are good captaincy options in their own right, in my opinion. Just I feel like the surest bet amongst these three fixtures seem like the Liverpool mids to me at the moment. Now let's talk about Zoff.
Let's talk about the game.
Let's talk
United
about
versus Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't see if there's anything to talk about this game. Lampard is... Ole's got a lot of problems, but Lampard isn't one. Lampard is just Ole's puppet. He's destroyed Lampard's team twice in the games that mattered last season. And he's just going to tell his players, Kepa is keeping and Zuma is defending.
Kepa won't be in goal. It's going to be Mendy. Mendy's back.
It's going to be Mendy. He's going to be fit. He's fit?
Yeah, he's in fact fit for today. He's going to play against Sevilla. He's in the squad.
Oh, so you had three big weaknesses in my head earlier. Now you have two big weaknesses. One is Zuma and one is Lampard. So yeah, I mean, why was Pulisic playing on the
right-hand
side, by the way?
I have no idea. I would have played Pulisic on the left with Cho on the right. Sometimes Lamp selections are baffling.
Yeah, it's completely baffling. So
Mount gets in the team irrespective. I think he'd be playing Mount at centre-back if he could.
Yeah, he's just Lampard's boy, right? I mean, nothing is going to... I just... For Chelsea's... I mean, all jokes aside, I hope that... I tweeted about this where I feel like Chelsea won't be elevated to the next level unless they let go of Mount, because he just doesn't have the quality that the other Chelsea attackers have, and it might take some time for them to gel in. But I think Lampard needs to start taking those risks, which he isn't at the moment. I mean, Pulisic, play him on the left. He's done so well for you in that position, and Zaha should be playing on the right hand side, and Kai should be playing center, and Werner should be playing. I mean, look what happened. I can't believe he wasted so much time playing Timo Werner in a central position. He looks so much better. He looks so threatening.
That was knee-jerk, I think, just because of that Barnsley game where you saw Havertz score the hat-trick, Tammy Linkup. I think that was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction from that.
I'd expect a good manager to see beyond that. I mean, Tammy... What is the advantage that Tammy Abraham is providing? He's physical. But I don't see him bullying defenders. I don't rate the player as much. So, yeah. But on a more serious note, how do you see this game playing out?
It's a bit difficult. I think if it's an early goal for either team, then you could see the game open up a lot more. You'd see a lot of counter-attacks. But I don't think this will be a very high-scoring game. I'd say probably a 1-1.
I in fact, think it's going to be a fairly high-scoring game because I don't rate either of our defenses at the moment. And both of them look fairly unsteady. Both of them look prone to errors. I don't know if Ole is going to play Pogba in midfield. If he's going to play Pogba and Bruno Fernandes in midfield, who he's going to pair him with. So I'm worried about both defenses, which is why I think it's going to be a fairly high-scoring game. It's about, in my head, which team scores up more in defense. Both teams have good players in attack to take advantage of these weak defenses as well. So
I hope you guys get walloped by PSG today, so that way there's some pressure on Solskjaer for the weekend.
Yeah, that isn't going to change it, because even if I'm not expecting anything, it'd be a miracle if you're able to pull off a result against PSG. In my head, I think they're a way more superior team. But even if we were to lose, I just see a reaction against Chelsea. But I think it's a case of two average defenses which aren't in really good form at the moment, so in terms of who has a better day in defense, in my opinion, because I think both attacks are fairly good.
I agree. I think you guys are doing better with Rashford in the center forward role than you were with Martial.
No, I think Marshall is a good pick in center forward. What was the difference maker in that Newcastle game was the link-up play that Mata and Bruno Fernandes had. They understand. They played with each other a fair few times in the past, in the cup games as well. They have a really nice understanding where they're playing a lot of short passes to each other. But I don't expect Mata to play the Chelsea game. It's not the kind of game for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he played a diamond also, because we don't have Martial, and I don't know how fit Cavani is. So he might play two up top and a midfield diamond four. I'm hoping he does something like that. But if we are playing a Matic, Pogba and Bruno in midfield, I see us losing, because you need more legs against a team like Chelsea.
Let's hope that's the case.
Yep. No, that won't be the case. I'm hoping Ole doesn't make the mistake again. All right, moving on to Bakar's stats of the week. He has three stats for us this week. You want to take us through them, Zofar?
Yep, I'll go to the first one. First one relates to the Leicester attack. Only West Brom and Palace have recorded fewer big chances from open play in the previous four game weeks than Leicester this season. Only Palace have a worse XG over the past two game weeks too. After defeating City 2-5 in game week 3, Leicester were the highest scorers of the league, but have failed to score since having negligible threat from open play. Prospects of an Arsenal clean sheet look bright.
Yep. I mean, I thought they were very, very poor against Aston Villa as well. No,
very
didn't
poor.
Create much. Very poor. The next stat that Big Man has for us is for about the Brighton defense, where he says that the Brighton against Palace became the first team this season to restrict their opposition to zero shots from inside the box from open play this season. Sitting second best for big chances conceded at home this season, they are now up against a West Brom side who have created just one single chance in open play from five games till date. Chances are that Ryan and Lamptey owners will be in profit.
One single chance in open play from five games. Wow.
Yeah. See, I told you that defense is good and they're going to keep possession. Just
no, I was more looking at West Brom rather than Brighton. I think they'll keep a clean sheet primarily due to the opposition they're facing.
Yeah. Then the next stat is about the Leeds defense. Can you read it out?
Yeah, it says, no team has conceded fewer big chances than Leeds over the past two game weeks. Over this spell, they have the best XGC2. Both Eiling and Dallas have been involved in three big chances of the 10 Leeds have managed so far. So attacking points are imminent. Both look like great picks going forward. See, that is interesting. Right. Again, we have two contrasting stats. Now, they've conceded the most shots in the box over the first five matches. But over the last two, they have conceded the fewest big chances. It's very hard to read, Leeds.
Very hard. Very hard. I'm still split. And I still don't feel like going for their 4.5 defenders.
I would buy them. But ultimately, I'm still waiting for 3-4 weeks to realize what Leeds are in terms of an opponent.
Fair enough. The differentials for...
Go ahead.
Who have you gone with?
I think you've gone with Podence.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that the differential picking form from last week, I picked Barkley last week. I hope that it continues as well. That might be a selfish reason to pick Podence as well.
Interesting.
But,
interesting. I should jump onto that. So I've gone with Pepe. I think that fixture for Arsenal is really good. And I think Bakar echoes my sentiments. He's gone with Bellerin. We are both targeting that Arsenal game.
Yeah, and you're targeting that Leicester team, which is not looking very good at the moment.
Precisely. Now, moving on to the individual team discussions, we've got your team up over here first, LR.
Yeah, I'm troubled in terms of what to do this game weekend. My mind has wavered every hour, so to say. Just to quickly go through my team, I have Martinez in defense. As my keeper, I have Trent, Semedo and Lamptey in defense. I have Salah, Sterling, Foden and Podence in my midfield. Just a note on Foden, I thought he's done really well so far and his attacking stats actually look really convincing. He could have braced in the last game as well, so I'm happy to hold him for now. And my forwards are Werner, Jimenez and Calvert-Lewin. Now, I have two free transfers and no money in the bank. And I don't really see a bad pick in my side at the moment. I mean, I don't really feel like removing anybody from my starting position. So I might just, if I didn't have three Wolves, I might have done something like a Mitchell to Kilman. But I might just change Burke to a more viable 4.5. If I was to make big moves, I'm hoping my hand is forced by Friday. But if I was to make moves, big moves, it would be an upgrade of Jimenez to Kane. But the problem is to fund it, I need to sell either Trent for a 5.3 million defender. Trent is playing Sheffield at home. This fixture suits him. Or I have to downgrade a Sterling to a Son. And I actually like Sterling for the West Ham away game as well. he scored the hat-trick against them last season as well, if you remember game week one. He likes playing against them, and he's done. I mean, Sterling's got me 2 goals in the last 2 games. There's no real reason to sell him. So I don't know what to do with this
Will
team.
Will he go another week without Spurs?
I mean, do you see a weakness in the team? They all have good fixtures this week as well. So I don't really feel like moving it. I could potentially go another week without Spurs. I'm just hoping
I don't
that
see
my...
where you would find. I think for me, probably Werner, but Werner isn't really a weak link either. How much
He's
money do you need?
Link.
You need
like
a significant
him.
Chunk of cash. You don't have any cash in the bank. You need close to 2 million to fund
2.2
even
million.
To Kane.
Trust me, I've even looked at Semedo to Kilman and something of that sort, and it just nothing is convincing. The compromise in the team to make that upgrade from Jimenez to Kane is nothing that has made me go, let's do it. Let's see where my head is. And there's also the Sergio Aguero factor. I can't rule that out. I just love him too much. So I feel like the moves I make depend on when I'm actually going to sit and make my moves, because my head is dilly-dallying everyone at the moment. And something that a friend on the chat mentioned, Joe, who's Cordelario. So, you know, us as managers, we always look at the risk of selling players as the more risky move to do, because they have good fixtures and they could haul. But there is as much of a risk to not buy the player that you actually want to buy. It's actually the same, different side of the same coin. You're only looking at it psychologically, as selling is a tougher thing because you had that player. You don't actually own that player. It's the same, different side of the same coin. So not buying the player you should buy is equally risky. It's just something that you need to align in your head when you're thinking about teams.
Correct. It's human nature to think otherwise.
Yep. So yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do, but if I do something, I'll let you guys know on Twitter.
Great. Bakar has just sent across his team, so I'll just walk you guys through it real quick. He's got Marty.
He already made his moves.
Yep. I'll just read out what the players he has mentioned who he's brought in. Martinez in goal. Saiss, Alexander-Arnold. Kilman is one of the guys he just brought in. Son, Sterling, Podence, Salah, Calvert-Lewin, Werner, Watkins. What was his other transfer? He got somebody for Son. Yeah.
He upgraded midfielder. He downgraded Reece James to get Kilman, which I like. Good move.
Yes.
Moving in early
Good
for Kilman.
Term.
He upgraded a midfielder. I don't quite remember which midfielder he upgraded, but yeah. He got Son. Good pick.
I think he upgraded Foden to Son. Something like that. I don't remember
Something
exactly.
like that. I don't remember if he had Foden as well. But good move. Son in right now is a good move, and Reece James was a weakness in that team, so I like what Barker's done.
Same. Now, my team, I have quite a few dilemmas, and it's similar to yours. I've got McCarthy in goal, Alexander-Arnold, Walker-Peters, Ailing. Now, I don't like playing both the Saints defenders home to Everton. Now, there's Salah, Son, Havertz, James, Jimenez, Calvert-Lewin, and Adams. Now, it's interesting, Adams was in the first on my sell list, but I think now I'm going to give him another couple of weeks. I sort of want to. Now, the obvious target is Kane.
Don't do it. Take the points and runs off.
Take the points and run. I don't know. I'm going to count options here. Now, I've got 2.8 in the bank. I can do a straight move for Jimenez to Kane and then like roll with Havertz and Adams. I would also be inclined to make a move for Justin to Saiss, because that sets me up well for the next 3-4 weeks. I don't have to play double Southampton defense for those. Alternatively, I would do Havertz to Barkley and Adams to Kane. So
that's the move I like. We discussed this in the morning. That's the move I like the most. I feel like Havertz isn't as much of a compromise to get Harry Kane, and Barkley is a good pick in that package. So if I was in your place, it's the move.
What do you read of Havertz now? He's got me consistent points. So the last 3 weeks, he's gotten 5, 6, 7. So again, that's no reason again to sell, but he doesn't look as involved, I think. He's in the right positions in the next 2 fixtures. I really don't know how involved he will be. It's a tough one to call.
Just wait and watch and look. Right now, what do we know? We know that Harry Kane is the best asset, one of the best assets in the game. So the compromise in terms of selling somebody who we don't know what he's going to offer and instead getting somebody who we know is a sure thing just seems very appealing to me. I feel like Adams and Barkley are at some similar level picks when you're looking at that. But Kane is a much bigger upgrade on Havertz. That's how I see those moves that you're
sure,
looking at.
I agree with you now. So it basically kind of comes down to, do you want Jimenez over the next 2-3 weeks or do you want Havertz? I think that's pretty much what I need to ask myself. There's obviously the emotional factor of wanting to keep Havertz, being from Chelsea. So that's
who do you think becomes the better pick, Pulisic or Havertz, eventually? That's also something that could be in your thinking, because you could be shoehorning into your position where you're not getting Pulisic because you have Havertz, you know?
I get the point you're making there, but I think Havertz will be the better pick, A, because of minutes. I think Pulisic will eventually get rotated because he's injury prone. And I think Havertz is quite direct. I think he's had the second or third most goal contributions across Europe of any player this season. So he always finds some way to get involved. It's not an easy decision this week at all.
Yep. And I think a lot of managers echo those sentiments. I don't think there are any easy decisions to make. I actually wish I had a bad player to sell, which would make life easier. All right.
It's a tough one. Now let's move on to the Q&A.
All right. We'll be very quick with how far off are we in terms of time so far?
We can finish it off in another 10 minutes. It's fine.
All right. Okay. So the first question is something I'll take on. Is it a good time to start? This question is asked from Susumim at the rate Andre Obas. I genuinely felt like answering this question. Is it a good time to start copying your team now, seeing that you've hit form? I think you should log on to your team and delete that team if this is how you want to play the game. This is absolutely not how we encourage playing the game. So what's the point? How are you having any fun just copying anybody else's team? So yeah, just don't play this way. The next question is for you, from at the rate FPL Rowan. Is it for once actually worth making a goalkeeper transfer given the form of Martinez from Ryan, McCarthy, etc.? Not for a hit. If you have two free transfers and nothing else pressing. Okay, sorry. What's your answer?
That's my answer.
Yes, I was reading that.
So yeah, pretty much not for a hit. I would say if you have like two free transfers, nothing else pressing, and you spot a good run of fixtures over the next 5-6. Now, Martinez, the next three aren't as good, I think, as they appear on paper. Leeds, Southampton and Arsenal. So maybe after that, I would be inclined to do the move.
Fair. Next question is from Stephen Power 03. Who are the best 6 to 8 million midfielders to choose from at the moment? Currently looking to get rid of Harvey Barnes. I feel like Grealish is, depending on how you want to use your cash, the Aston Villa midfielders are standout picks in this bracket. And if you have an appetite for risk, I really like Foden as a pick as well. I think he's looked really good in the past 2 or 3 games. Especially in the Arsenal game, I was really impressed against his performance. Even Pep was praising it. Amongst the City midfielders, he's got the best stats as well at the moment. So if you have a higher appetite for risk, I don't mind Foden as a pick as well. The next question is from Chandrakant at the rate FPL Tinker. It's a friend of the pod. This one's for you, Zoff. Do I keep faith in Pulisic as Chelsea do have a favorable run of fixtures, or go in for someone like Foden or Trossard?
Okay, so I'm going to use the Sevilla game today as a real benchmark in terms of how much faith to put in Chelsea. Now, I wouldn't be getting rid of Pulisic yet. I think he'll definitely play against United. And I think Foden or Trossard aren't in the same league as Pulisic, as SPL options. Yeah. So if those are the two you're looking to exit towards, then I would definitely keep Pulisic.
I agree. I think Pulisic is a good pick. I think he's going to... Zajac is fit now. He's going to play on that side.
I think today he'll probably be on the bench again versus Sevilla, but I'm hoping against you lads he starts.
Yep. The next question is from Harry Duke, HD1. Richarlison is out for 3 games. Does this make James a better option? Will he play higher up the pitch? I'll take this one. We saw that in the game against Brighton, where once Richarlison was subbed off... James did move further up the pitch, but you also need to factor in that Everton are losing a key asset in their front three. So I think these two factors sort of counterbalance themselves. The one advantage, though, with James is he could potentially be on penalties because Richarlison was on pen. So I reckon it's between Richarlison, it's between James and Calvert-Lewin for the penalty kicks. And I have a feeling it's going to be
James. I think it's going to be James.
Yep. The next question is from at the rate FPL Mate 38. He's addressed it to me. As a Son and Kane owner, how and which City assets to go for the next 2 games? Is downgrading Trent to double up on Kane and Kun a sensible move? Kun, Sergio Aguero in as a differential under 5% is always a good move. But the fixture for Trent this week, Sheffield United at home, is really good. So I wouldn't do it this week. Just time it correctly. That's all I'll say. Don't sell Trent this week.
I'd agree.
Yeah, I might do it myself though if I really, really want Kane. But Just saying. The next question is from @FPLT. This one's for you, Zoff. When is the right time to get back on City assets? Or all use differentials right now?
I think when KDB is back, their attack will probably go to another level again. And I think game week 9 to 10 is when they have a really good fixture run. So I would target that. And it actually coincides very well with Spurs' difficult run. So you can transition your Spurs assets over to your City assets at that point.
Yeah. I'd just like to add though, it's right now as differentials also, they aren't a bad team to go for. I actually thought their performance against Arsenal was pretty decent. Everybody had a good game. So if you have some poor assets in your team and if you fancy a differential, why not? Next question is for you, Zoff. It's from @StadiumSports. With so many midfield assets, which Chelsea players are under the threat of rotation with Champions League starting?
I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think Pulisic primarily because he's so injury prone. I think Lampard will be cautious of him playing him three times a week, week in, week out, because of injury fears. Maybe with Ziyech, he's a little bit cautious initially. Also, while he's just come back from injury. But I think Havertz is probably one of the more nailed players there.
Yeah, and also Lampard's love affair like Mount, with Mount that we already mentioned.
I'm hoping so, yeah, that recedes a little bit.
Yeah, that's it. It's for first pod without our friend Barker. We did miss him, but we wish him well. And as usual, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. It always encourages us. And next week, we have a very interesting guest coming on. He's just confirmed with me today as well. We have Tom Freeman coming on. It's his first podcast this season as well. He's an Aston Villa fan and he does some writing for Fantasy Football Scout, and he's got 5 1K finishes and 8 top 10K finishes. That's one more than yours, Zoff. I wasn't expecting anybody to have more 10 top 10K finishes.
I'm sure
incredible record. I'm looking forward to the podcast with him next week.
Should
as well.
Be great. Hopefully Villa get a win.
Hopefully United get a win.
No.
All right. We'll see you next week and thanks for listening to us.
Thank you.